I turn your attention to the sugya in Shabbos, and I said earlier. Okay, you started it.
Did you get the joke too?
Okay, never mind. I picked this sugya because it provides an opportunity to demonstrate a lot of things about or a lot of aspects of my methodology, which differ. Again, many of you are returning. Some of you come from places where you're familiar with this. Some of you know this from other sources. But where it differs from the more traditional yeshiva curriculum. So the first thing that you'll see on the Makoros is that I asked you to look at a Tosefta. That's not terribly common. I asked you to look at Yerushalmi. That's a little more common, but also not terribly common. One of the things, once we arrive at doing Sugyos Keseder, we will do Yerushalmi as well, not just Babli. That's one aspect. That in itself is not a chiddush. But there are other aspects to this sugya, which we're going to see, are a little different than things that you normally expect. Now, I'm going to mention one particular aspect without elaborating greatly, but it's something you should be aware of. If you look at the sheets that everybody, the sheets that were handed out, you'll forgive me for having to send PDFs, but some of you don't have one of the fonts, and if I send it without a PDF, you're going to have all your fonts blurred, as we discovered last year. So hopefully you'll clean out your inboxes. But if you look on you've had lots of problems, by the way. If you look at the way I presented the Gemara on Shabbos, Daf Yud Ches, you'll see that there are three fonts there. And the reason I do that is the following. When you look at a sugya, you can choose formally or informally to break the sugya down into its layers, but it's important to realize the layers of a sugya. Two of the layers are typically obvious, Tanaitic sources and the rest of the Gemara. But in fact, there are normally in a sugya at least three layers that you can usually clearly define. One is the Tanaitic layer, which is the Mishnah and other brises that are quoted. The second are the words of the Amoraim, and the third is the Gemara, what some academics would call the Stam, what the Balei Tosas, at least as it's printed in our text, I don't know if it was censored or not, what Tosas refers to as the Shas. this is a third layer. Now, the reason it's important to distinguish the two layers, the Amoraic layer and the anonymous layer, the Shas layer, is that if a particular authority makes a statement and gives a reason, so that is the reason for that particular statement or din, at least in that person's opinion. So if Rav says X and he gives reason Y, that's the reason, that's what Rav held. If Rav, however, says X and the Gemara fills in reason why, well, it's possible that Rav held why. It's also possible that there's another explanation for Rav. Now, how exactly one is going to arrive at what another possible explanation is, or how one is going to know that there might be a different explanation, so that's a subject in its own right. But immediately it's important to realize that there is a difference between what the Amora says and how the Amora is understood. And you can only have that difference if you have a distinction between layers in the Gemara. It happens to be in this sugya, in terms of the Psak Halacha, it is not the only major factor, but it's one of the major factors that drives the discussion among the Rishonim as to how to see a particular line in the Gemara and whether that statement in fact belongs to the Amora or whether it belongs to the Gemara. That's why you have a number of places in Masechta Shabbos, particularly in the first parak, I don't know why, where Tosos, the Balei Tosos, engage in this activity in splitting up the Gemara, a line in the Gemara into two parts, to the Divrei HaMora and to the Divrei HaGemara, or the Divrei HaShas, and explaining that the Amora didn't necessarily state the second part, that wasn't necessarily his reason, that's the Sugya filling it in. In other places, Tosos uses it to explain why you have a machlokas between two Gemaras. If you want really a great example of this, you can look at the top Tosos on the last Amud in Bava Basra, Kofayin Vav Amud Aleph, for really a classic example of resolving sugyas based upon cutting the what looks like an Amora statement into the Amora statement and the Gemara's Perush. So that's one aspect that we're going to see in the sugya. So if you can keep this Xerox on the side of the Gemara as we go through it, and you can sort of pay attention to the various fonts. When you look at the page there, the unappealing courier font near the beginning is the Tanaitic font. The very bold and I think David font is Amoraic, and everything else, the Times New Roman, is the font of the Shas or the Stam. Oh, yes, you also get one for Tanakh, but that's kind of obvious. I put scripture in the Stam font. Yes. I don't promise always to be free of not made mistakes. Yeah, I'm sorry.
Yeah, the Rabbi
Shvisa Kalim. Yes, the Rabbi Shvisa Kalim should be Tanedik. Yes, that's correct. I'm glad that you caught that. There are a couple. There also, I didn't do it here, but when I'm not sure as to which layer something belongs, which is usually only it's a suffix between Amora versus Shas, so I often put it in italics, but I choose the font which I think is more likely. But you may differ, and I certainly welcome the disagreement. I should have added that at the start. Not only do I tolerate questioning, but I and welcome it. I also tolerate and even welcome dissent. Okay. So let's start reading the Gemara. I will also at some point start to pick on you, but for today I will take volunteers. If anyone would like to volunteer themselves, Shaul, go ahead. Tana Rabbanan. You can read the Mishnah. We should read the Mishnah first. Okay. Read the Mishnah. Alright, so what is this? So, firstly, just one hara. I don't know how widespread this is. The first parak of Shabbos has this large section on dealing with Machlokas, Beis Shammai, and Beis Hillel. You find this at least in one of the Masechta, where the Masechta really opens all the Beis Shammai, Beis Hillel material. Most of it gets stuffed at the beginning of the Masechta. Which is Maseches Beitza. I don't remember if there's any other Masech that has that. I don't know why that is. But you have a large number of debates here. If you would believe the Rambam's counting system, you come up with 18 debates. It's a little stretch. It's not quite really 18 the way we would count. And if you learn the Mishnayos, you see also where the number 18 is coming from. One other comment aside, I should mention there is a work that is quite interesting on this Masechta, Masechta Shabbos. It is, I believe, still in print. It is a critical edition of the Mishnah by Professor Avram Goldberg. I think he's still Ben HaChaim at Hebrew. Maybe I'm wrong. And in it is a comprehensive critical edition and critical commentary, which incorporates a lot of the material of the Bavli, Yushalmi, and Tosefta on this. So you might want to read some of his stuff in your spare time. It's kind of interesting. Also be aware, I'm not going to go through it, but those of you know that we will oftentimes refer to Lieberman as well, and Tosefta Kipshuta, that is in the base Medrash on the opposite wall. So the Mishnah said, quotes Beis Shammai saying that you're not allowed to soak what are the dios, samanim, and karshinin. Ink and spices and karshinim. Anyone know what karshinim are? Vetch. Good. Okay. I just want to see if anybody. I only know this because I had to find the words for use in my dissertation. But vetch. It's a kind of bean or legume, I think, or something like that. I have absolutely no idea what it really is, but that's what it's translated as vetch.
Rashi gives the French word, but then I figured I saw it.
Okay. Well.
Vet and it's not even.
You know why Rashi put the French words in there?
No,
I'm sorry, no, I have it wrong. The reason why Rashi learned French was so he could write the laws in his parish. So vetch, whatever exactly, some kind of legume that is. There's also, by the way, safer otzalawazi of Rashi, but my sense of using it is it's kind of useless because all he does is like give you. What's that? Right. So it's really not particularly helpful. But there is such a thing. So karshinim are vetch. It was animal fodder. That's actually important. Not here. It's important in Hilchos Trumos and Maaseros because there are certain kulos that you'll find in the Mishnah in Adios in the first parak and also found in Maaser Sheni in the second parak. I think it's Beis Dalet and Maaser Sheni that deal with the status of karshinim and being metameh v'yadayim. So the Mishnah says that you're, according to Beis Shammai, you're not allowed to soak it. What is the malacha involved? So this is not simple. The obvious malacha candidate would have been. One other comment, not that I think this is a problem today, but to quote one of my colleagues, not that since I was here first that wasn't an issue, but when the student stood up from him, when he walked into shir, he said, "You be mechabe me. I prefer that if you're going to be mechabe me, you can be mechabe me with less standing and more preparing." Okay. So anyway. So what is the malacha that might be involved?
Sovea.
Sovea would not have been, what's that?
So,
No, Rashi, I don't think Rashi... No, he doesn't say litzvo. What does he say? What's that word? Litzeva. Right. No, I believe the Rambam holds that Shriya Samanim and Karshinim Dio, certainly something that's not Bar Gibol, if you learn the Sugya, is Tzoveya. But I think most Rishonim understand that it's...
Rashi and the
Rebbe has litzvo. You have to find out what the origin of that Rashi is and whether or not that's a correct Girsa. But that still doesn't mean that even if that's correct, that doesn't mean the malach is tzoveya. It means the samanim are litzvoa. But I think the general understanding, based upon the opening sugya, it all depends on how you read the maskana. That's the machlokas, the Rambam, the Rishonim, is lisha. Okay, lisha when you knead a dough, when you make a dough. I will, by the way, to the extent that I'm capable of doing so, make sure that we also understand the mitzias of Hilchos Shabbos when we do the Mishnah and we do the malachos of sewing. I know when I was a Talmud in Yeshiva, we just kind of our eyes glazed over and we glossed over it and we pretended that we read it and understood it. There's a very nice little thin volume called Maise Oreg. I'm sure they'll have it at the Sarim sale this year if it's still in print, which gives you a full description on how you weave and the loom and so on. And if anybody is really adventurous, we can make a sheer trip out of this to, you know, some farm in New Jersey or you know, one of the counties to the north of here, where maybe we could get a demonstration when we of the process of tzviya, of spinning and weaving and so on. Yes, it would be nice to actually know what one is talking about. Again, the remember, in the traditional yeshiva world, and it's certainly even truer in Brisk, so mitzias is something to be frowned upon. Everything is supposed to be a theoretical construct. Theoretical constructs are important, but not at the expense of ignoring the reality of mitzias. I'm sorry?
How did the geol, the ink, be large?
No, because you start out with much thicker. It's not, our ink is very liquid, but they may have started out with some type of a paste. Either was subsequently diluted or the writing process may have been a little different.
But you're not kneading, it's just sitting.
Oh, so what I was going to say before is that when you have lisha on a dough, so you start typically with the flour and then you pour water into it, and sinas mayim into the kemach is already, that's considered lush. Okay? I'm sorry, let me correct. No, I'm sorry. Once you start knead on something... On something that requires mixing, once you start mixing. On something that doesn't require mixing, which would be these, once you put it in. That's the whole machlokas, the Rambam and other Rishon revolves around that point. Yes, Abi.
I originally thought that it was makif hapadish, because what you're doing is that you're making just the final step.
So, makif hapadish is probably, you know, there are two funny malachas in the list of Hilchos Shabbos from my perspective. One is Hotzah, which doesn't really seem to be a malacha, so the Rishonim call a malacha gura, and the other is Makif HaPatish, which is a catch-all that can include everything. There is a Yerushalmi, and I'm going to talk about this when we do Avos and Tolados, and I owe the knowledge, I think I re-encountered it, but I first had seen this Rameir Lichtenstein when he gave shiur here a couple of years ago. The Yerushalmi says... it's in the beginning of it's the Mishnah Ayin Gimel in the Bavli, so that's the Mishnah Zayin Beis in the Yerushalmi, says that certain Amoraim spend X number of years learning Hilchos Shabbos and classifying, and you know this Yerushalmi, are classifying the Malachos, and basically anything they couldn't really classify they just call Makif HaPatish. So it's sort of the, in some cases it's except for when you're actually being Makif HaPatish, it's a last resort, but we need to establish somewhat of a better definition. My suspicion that the reason why Rishonim would avoid Soveya might be the same reason they would avoid Makif HaPatish, is that this is sort of not permanent in the sense that it's not an end to itself. In other words, the yo is used to write on paper. I could faster see that if you drew a picture on paper and for some reason it didn't fall under kosev and it didn't fall under roshem, that you might call that makif hapatish. But the ink itself, which is really only an intermediate step, is harder to term makif hapatish. And makif hapatish certainly suggests it's a final stage in something, you know, even if it's somewhat amorphous. So, okay. Anyway, whatever the malacha is, so you basically put the stuff in before Shabbos, and it happens on its own, and that continues into Shabbos. Okay? Is that a problem? Why should that be a problem? So malacha is being done on Shabbos by your action that came before Shabbos. Is that a problem at all?
No,
depends.
Why? How does it depend? Why should it depend? On what does it depend?
Possibly on the...
Why would we say it's Aser? Let me reframe the question. Why would we say it's Aser? Ayo?
We want to prevent Malacha from being done on Shabbos.
When you say you want to prevent Malacha from being done on Shabbos, okay, so there are two ways of saying it. One is to say you want to prevent... You don't want Malacha happening on Shabbos. You know, as the Tosefta has and the Yerushalmi has, Shesha Semin Tavod Vasisa Kom Lachecha. So your Malacha is supposed... Malacha should not be happening, should not be being done on Shabbos. That's one possible concern. Eitan?
It's possible to... You say that by starting the Malacha, you're actually still doing the Malacha.
Okay, so that is what you're suggesting is a tremendous, tremendous kiddush and difficult to sustain, but it's a possibility that should be entertained. You're asking a really more fundamental question. When I do a malacha and it continues, what is called the Shas Asiyas HaMalacha? There's a very important Nimukah Yosef I have to dig up, I think from Baba Kama, about, I think it's probably the Sugi Isha Mishim Chitzo, about, what's that? Lighting something, is that Gemara or Rif? Right. So the issue of when you start something before, when your action continues and it's still attached to you. So that's a very important issue. We'll have to discuss that. But assume for the moment that it may even be in this Yerushalmi. It may even be in this Yerushalmi. So that's a possibility to be entertained. That in effect, your malacha continues. The case where this is going to come up is when you put, it comes up on both ends. You start the malacha before Shabbos, but it continues being done on Shabbos. What happens if you put a loaf of bread in the oven on Shabbos, but it doesn't get baked until after Shabbos? And so that issue...
It's not cooked until...
That's not so pashut. I think we pass in Yechayev. Right. In other words, the fact is, the more intuitive conclusion, or the one that certainly stepped halacha, is that when you do malacha now, when your asiyah is done, that's the time of the malacha, at least for Shabbos purposes. And therefore, if you put the bread in the oven before Shabbos, and it bakes on Shabbos, even if almost all the baking was done on Shabbos, you're not chayiv. It may be aser for gzeira, but you're not chayiv. If you put the bread in a minute before Shabbos is over, and then the baking continues after Shabbos, so you may be chayiv for that as well.
But if you put the bread on and then take it off before it cooks, you're not chayiv.
That's different. That's because the malacha was never done.
But if the asiyah happens when you're...
If you put the put the bread in... No, it's a conditional asiyah.
But
near
Hanukkah, when you light it, it was right to stay. Similarly, you might say, if you're positing that by putting the bread in now, it was right to be baked. It was an act of kishah. Right.
No, but the fact is that if it never gets baked, where I think everybody's going to agree, you can't be chayav for the malacha. But once the bread is baked, so if the baking of the bread is misyaches in terms of malacha, the time you put into the oven. I'm not saying you couldn't make such an argument, but I believe we don't. Anyway, I'm just raising the Eitan's issue, raised to that possibility. Because that's a second consideration. Perhaps the malacha continues to be done, and that's your asiyah, even though you're not doing it on Shabbos. Yeah. Bobby.
Is there a
zero
that you might have to pick something that is
right
that
you... Okay, so a third possibility is that you don't want to allow a malacha, you're not allowed to do malacha samach l'shabbos, which continues on Shabbos, because you might come to do it on Shabbos itself. The same way that Amir La'akum is treated as a gzeira that you'll come to do it yourself, or that's how it's commonly explained. Okay, Mar Sayin is another consideration, although that one becomes more difficult to sustain. Maris Ayin is... It's more difficult for two reasons. It's possible with the Maris Ayin. In this particular sugya, there's no Maris Ayin questions, but there might be Mishma Ozen questions. Alright, so that's a possibility. Yeah, one more.
First one was that where you don't want malacha being done, and not quite, but the second one was where you're doing malacha, but you don't, it's not that you don't want malacha being done, it's that if your kli is doing it, it's the...
Say it in short form.
Shvitas
Kalim.
Okay,
Shvitas Kalim. No, you're allowed to say it. Let me just add as a...
How is that different than the first?
How is that different from the first possibility?
It's like Kalim Kibufo.
thing, right?
Okay, if you want, that's an I wasn't thinking in those terms, but you could say it that way. In other words, take the Gemara's final ukimta, that the mana ha'ara, right? If you took the mugmar and you put it on the karka, so there can't be an issue of shvisas kelim anymore. Right? It's not that your kli is doing malacha, as your behemoth doing malacha, as your eved doing malacha, as you doing malacha. No, it's just that malacha is being done. Nothing that's attached to you is doing malacha. And if it's a concern of Shvisas Kalim, it's mutter. If it's a concern, is that on your behalf or because of your efforts, malacha continues to be done on Shabbos, that it's a problem. So then that could be aser as well. Now, just to talk about before we go into the Gemara, just to raise one other question, Zayol's suggestion. It's an absurd suggestion on one level. Why? No, it was a perfectly reasonable suggestion. In fact, the Yerushalmi makes it, but the Tosefta has it. But there's something very problematic with that assumption. That malacha being done. In effect, it's almost the issue raised at the end of the sugya in the Bavli. Shalom? Oh, no. So that's why I carefully, I said it in the last time around, I said it that on because of your efforts, malacha shouldn't be being done. In other words, you shouldn't set things in motion somehow. You know, even if you're a passive actor, even if your Haim is not doing it, even if your Kalim aren't doing it. There's a more basic, obvious problem.
With the issue of Gideus and Ner, they were spoken, for example, the Ner, because people, like, there's a mission of, you know, he starts to rock him out, he puts the Ner, but Shammai says, don't light the candle, it's going to burn on Shabbos.
Okay, so that's a very good textual way of saying, I'll just start out with a larger societal question. Unless you're going to adopt the Karaite position, which you don't have fires burning on Shabbos, you know, and I don't know if Karaite halacha, the Karaite halacha, I don't know if it was just limited to fire, I don't know what they held by other malachas.
Yeah, they stay at home.
The question is, what about... Clearly, they couldn't light fires. That's another. That's a different. That's already a bayishini shita of ayete ishmin koma bayom hashvii. You know how far you go with tumen and things like that. So there are other issues as well that play into that. But what about what would they have held on the sinas unim shofishtan latanur? I don't know what they would have held, but clearly we're not certain. This was a defining characteristic. The difference between the Rabbanites and the Karaites is whether you have hatud on Shabbos. There are those who say, I don't know where this is written, that the chulent is a zecher, is lehotzi miliban. What's that? Who says that? Okay. You went to a yeshiva where they learned Marsha. So it's clear that we allow some malachas to continue on Shabbos. So the question is, even Beis Shammai cannot really hold that malacha can't continue on Shabbos if we have any involvement. It's hard to imagine that. There has to be a line. Ozzy?
Isn't that where Shema Kol comes in? I mean, the whole idea that it bothers malacha, something that's, like, nobody needs...
No, but Hashma's Kol is a separate explanation.
I know, but if we look at it...
And look in the Yerushalmi, for example. When you look in the Yerushalmi, the Yerushalmi defines those things which Beis Shammai as not a problem going on Shabbos in terms of malacha being done. And yet, Chinas Berechayim is aser, and one of the reasons is because of Hashemot's Kol. Hashemot's Kol says even something that's mutter, that's not a problem of malacha happening on Shabbos, is still aser. That's a different consideration.
I just think, like, we look at all the different malachas that we listed in the Tosefta. They're malachas that aren't really getting in anybody's way, except for Tachanun Berechayim. Like, there's a difference between having lights on and having the oven on in your house and having, like, a big construction site going on across the street to be on Shabbos. There's a difference between, like
is the Sinas Unum Shopishtam Latanur such a big activity any more than Hanacha Mugmar?
I think the problem with that is less having to do actually doing
the law. So now you're introducing multiple considerations. Right? You're no longer settling on one explanation.
Well, I think there are multiple considerations.
No, there are multiple possibilities. The question is Beis Shammai, I mean, there's a larger question that the Gemara never actually connects the dots on. Is Shitas Beis Shammai in the Braisa the same as Shitas? Is it the same exact thing that's going on? Or whoever that Braisa is that the same as the Shita in the Mishnah? But right now we're sort of looking for the grand unifying theory. Maybe there's not. But putting that aside, Nair, right? We permit Nair, right? You have to answer the basic question for Beis Shammai. If you hold that there's an Isser Malacha being done, why is Nair permitted?
Because it's
think the more Eddie? Obvious distinction is whether or not it's creative, meaning Nair just includes heat and light. But with the whole, with the three cases that are possessed between the position time and the right time, you have something that's called chop and depend, but it's creative to a lot of them.
So, but then take the case of the code then, where you have meat.
Whoa, just hold on one second, hold on. You can't introduce that. That's not... Is that even in a brisa? The Gemara just raises that at the end.
Well, it's coupled with
Nero. Hold on, no. But Nero's... I forget for the moment even Nero. Even just within the Mishnah and the brisa, assuming that the brisa, the way the Gemara Bavli's Maskana is Beis Shammai, how does that fit with the Sheet and the Mishnah? You know, if the reason for the things Isurim in the Mishnah is that Malacha is being done, so what is the distinction? You can put Nair out of the category, but whatever distinction you draw, Nair is going to have to fit with. But the Shput is not the issue. The Basar is the issue, and the Basar, right? Well, we don't know what Beis Shammai will hold on to Shput. The Basar certainly the Kedera produces something new, right? And you want to say that when it comes to Mugmar and Gofris, and even a Nair, that basically it's totally consumed. You're not left with anything. Okay, that's possible. We have to make sure that it fits in all the cases. All right, but there will have to be, so that's not a bad starting point, there will have to be some type of a distinction.
There's a possibility that, considering Nair and the entire general slate, that Beis Shammai allows you to use it on Shabbat, at least because it is something that is relevant and useful for Shabbat, as opposed to the other cases in the Mishnah, which is something that it has nothing to do with Shabbat. So, with the case with the Dunah, could be that it's like that's also beautiful. It could be either one that's either to beautify it, or because you're afraid that it might, that the plants would go dead, in which case then you would have.
I think your distinction is. I think your distinction is an excellent one, except for you present the kasha. I never thought of that angle, but your teretz to the problematic question on your answer, I think, makes it suspect. It's a very good idea, but I think you're right. Post Gemara and Begina prose is a problem, and your suggestion is not it's not fully satisfying.
Is that it could be that it's not only something that's useful, but something that is useful for. That if you don't do it right now, it's going to be damaging to you. It's like, do not.
Okay, you're right. Or you want to introduce two arguments: active versus passive. Creating versus preventing, combined with whether it's for Shabbos or not. It's either for Shabbos or if it's preventative, then it's permissible. If you're trying to get something done, it's a little bit dachuk. Waiting one more day probably is not going to. But okay, it's possible. One other guide, and I want to ask you one other question about this, and then we'll start to read.
I don't want to get off the topic on a tangent, but you said that Maris Ayin wasn't going to come into play in this section, because with the Nachri, it seemed that Rashi is saying that it's all, like, when...
No, I think it's clear...
He says Kinneret.
No, it's clear, pretty much for every single Shita, that the reason for the other parts of the Mishnah are going to be different than the reason for this part.
Oh, so when you said it's not going to come into
play. All we're talking about now is clearly giving to a Nachri, all that stuff is a separate issue. It's unrelated to the first part of the Mishnah. We're only talking about the Shorin and the Nesinas, Unisha Pishon Latana, and so on. Now, let me ask a question. Skipping ahead, let's read the Brice already. Okay, Tana Rabbanan, whoever's reading for me, Shaul.
Tana Rabbanan.
What does poskin mean? Yeah, well, I heard somebody say potkin. What's that? You know enough to sound scholarly to the ignorant. The word poskim is a very rare word in rabbinic literature. There is a word later in Shabbat, heftek, which is a storage house. It's not clear what poskim means to unstore. You have the water stored up and you let it go. It's not clear. There is an Aramaic root Which sometimes means to throw, sometimes it means sort of to break open, which is closer to this one. You're sort of breaking open the dike or something like that and letting the water out. It's in a highly unusual word. I think there's only, I forget where, there's only one other occurrence aside from the sprite. What's that? Correct. In a similar context, when you let your waters out into the Rosh Hasharabim, are the only places in Talmudic literature this word appears, at least in Hebrew. In Aramaic, it's a little more common, but not terribly common. Okay, so anyway, so poskin mayim legin erev Shabbos im chashechem ismalis alechas chaleim kulo. You can leave out erev Shabbos, all the kisveyat are missing the parentheses material. As a very quick aside, kisveyat are very important as well. Anyone is interested, the library has. I have also, if you really need to check something, the Lieberman CD with all the kisveyat that they put on CD-ROM. It's a very large portion of most of the major manuscripts, although they're missing pieces here and there of Tavia Munich. They even have started to put Geniza fragments on it, so it's very useful to be able to check kisveyat. Be aware of the Duke Sofrim, which is in the base medrash on a good portion of Shas, including Masechah Shabbos, if you need most of the Seder Nashim, you have to go to the library. There are various editions. At some point during the year, maybe I'll do the manuscript share. I won't leave it like I did last year until June. Some of you will hear it for the umpteenth time, or whatever. But anyway, so in the Kisveyad, these lines are missing. They are necessary. It's not a change in meaning. Most Shinui and Nishos and Kisveyad are not significant, at least in terms of the meaning of the text, but and this is one of them. Okay, so Manich and Mugmar.
Manich and Mugmar.
All right, now here's an interesting example where you have the same word back to back, which probably means two different things. Here it's probably speaking about clothing, and you wish to perfume it. Mugmara spices, if you learn Maseches Beitzah, you'll learn the issue about Davar Shavu'ah Chol Nefesh and whether you can burn Mugmar Yom Tov. And then the Mishnah says, Manichin.
Manichin.
Gofris? No, you skip on. What is Gofris?
Sulfur
is usually the translation. It also might be pitch. What were the purposes? So, what are Kalim here? The Rashi describes the silver utensils. The truth is, in the last line, Kalim meant clothing. I don't know if it's. In modern day, sulfur, I think, was used as disinfectant. But I don't think they. I don't know if they used to do that because obviously they didn't understand. That's it. There's more than one use for it. I think that they didn't understand about bacteria and the like. So I suspect that in fact is to highlight the way Rashi describes it. Sort of blackens and you can see the silver in parts. It settles in and you can see the design more nicely. Today I think we call it tarnish, but they apparently must have liked it.
Does Rashi know for a fact that?
An excellent question which straddles the line between Beis Medrash and library or academy. Obviously, when Rashi describes a Metzias, he has one of two bases for it. Either because he can put together enough Gemaras to figure it out, or because, in fact, it was a Metzias in his day. It's hard. I can't tell you which one, but you know that's the study of that plays a role in the study of realia. In some cases, it's both. Remember, and some of you, again, I'm sorry if I sound like a broken record player about this. I found the book, by the way, about sleep patterns. I've been quoting a little bit wrong, but the way people used to sleep. But the book hasn't been published yet. It's supposed to be out in January. I forget what it's called. Did any of you talk to you about this? No, I struggled to find it in all the places on the web, only to realize that Amazon had it because it was not published yet. It was supposed to have been published 5 years ago. The Smithsonian article about it, about how people used to sleep at night before there were lights at night, before there were lights that people could stay up and so on. It's very, very interesting. The world has changed, and therefore our Metzius is completely different. That's why we don't understand anything about weaving. But the change from the time of the Gemara to the time of Rashi is not quite as great. There were many technological advances. I mean, let's not minimize that, but they were fairly small as compared to the changes between Rashi's time and our time. So to come back to your question, I don't know specifically in this case. It's probably the case in Rashi's time they were still doing it. Whether that's what it was being used for in the Gemara, I can't tell you for sure. But I suspect that it's probably in this case correct. You can go to slightly earlier sources. You can look in the Aruch, who's already closer geographically to the to where, you know, where this is being written, and a little closer in time, there might be material from the Gaonic literature. The Gaonim already may have more in the way of tradition. It also obviously raises the larger question when Rishonim are interpreting the Gemara, to what extent do they have traditions, to what extent are they interpreting? Generally speaking, I believe it's a combination of both. Michael?
Okay, this is just, you were mentioning about how the sulfur did what it did. Stop me if this gets boring, but I remember back in Camp Regesh when we used to make the prints on like the foil things, but the difference is you rub it with sulfur and then you scratch it or you print it, because then you don't put the sulfur on afterwards. You rub it with sulfur, you smoke it with sulfur, and then afterward when you do the design, it's like rubbing crayon on a piece of paper and using a toothpick to scrape it off so that it comes through more sharply.
I'm not going to argue with that, except that I think Rashi's description, either here or elsewhere in Shas.
That's how I understand Rashi.
Let me just stop, take a look. I mean, it's not. Yeah.
I think you're saying you did it backwards.
No, it's right. Not the way you're saying it. Right. So I mean, again, that boils down to the question: does Rashi have first-hand experience in describing it? Even if he has sort of a tradition as to what it means, maybe he has it a little bit backwards. But that's not my instinct is not that way. My instinct is to simply to highlight the designs. That may be an advancement, but here, if it's not scratched well enough, so the only way to make it more visible is that...
Well, I assume that if you scratch it deeper, you expose more pressure silver. It'll
when
you
smoke it, when you rub off what you can,
then what's left is in the cracks.
In the cracks, right.
Okay.
I mean, so we're saying they scratched out the design, they dunk it on the ground.
And now they blacken it, and then you wipe off the rest, and you're left with what's left in the cracks, and shows the design. Okay. Yes?
When Matthias Rashi was working with, why would you bother recording it? Wouldn't he assume that his contemporaries understood it?
That's a very difficult... I can't, you know, it's... I can't answer that question. I don't know when Rashi chooses. You know, there are a lot of... I wouldn't work with that assumption. I don't know if I can prove that to you, but I wouldn't work just because Rashi describes it means it's not contemporary material.
Not everyone's skilled in
that as well. Okay. Fine. Now the next case, and this is the interesting one to me. Go ahead.
Is Palanit Agave Maget.
Okay, now what is the malach involved here?
Hold on.
Let's look at the other cases. Do they involve malacha? Yes. Okay, and it's malacha that's continuing on Shabbos. What about Kilar and Ispalanis? Now, the one thing I'll tell you for certain, it's not involving genuine malacha. It's not involving genuine malacha. Refuah is not malacha. I don't remember. Does anyone here done enough Bayashini stuff? I don't recall the refuah is one of the things. Refuah, if refuah was a problem in the Bayashini period and even in some later sources, it's not a problem dafka on Shabbos. I don't know if any of you are aware of the stream of thought among Rishonim. It's not the one we accept, so we pretend it doesn't exist. Ibn Ezra, for example, holds that going to the doctor is only permissible for external injuries, not for internal medicine. Hard to believe. We take for granted that you go, Kastner, I'm not trying to put you out of business. We take for granted that other than, that any kind of medicine that is efficacious and more likely to produce a positive outcome than a negative outcome or whatever it is, so we generally speaking permit and consider it laudatory and mandatory. However, it's not exactly clear within Chazal and earlier sources. There is that passage in Divrei Hayamim where Asa is criticized for when he got sick, he consulted the doctors and not God. And the question of what you do with that. Ibn Ezra's position, you'll find them in Chumash on Harapo Yerape, is that the permission that the Torah gives to heal, because the Gemara points out that the Torah has given permission to heal. It's not just assumed. Harapo Yerape is Mikancha Nitan Roshos Lerofe Lerapos, is limited to external injuries, not to internal injuries. Okay, so we don't accept that, but such a notion exists. But that refuah issue is a problem throughout the week. It's not a Shabbos problem. So there's an issue of refuah here, but there's no issue of malacha. And presumably, I presume that you don't make gzeros not to do something before Shabbos, or not even a having to make zeros before not this on Shabbos, which even if you did it on Shabbos, it's only going to be an issur drabbanan. And even what's that? Okay, so why, see, this is the unfortunate thing of having to do anything in Shabbos before having done all the major sugyos. Can someone answer that question? Why is it not a problem of assuming of Kabbalah, whatever the Kabbalah of Kabbalah is, the three of Machlokas or Rishonim? Why is this question not, why is that suggestion not correct? He suggested that when you're putting on your head to stop the bleeding, which is not even necessarily what you're doing here, but let's accept that, that that's a malacha of Kabbalah, whatever, Shchita, Tzoveya, Netilas, Mefarek, the three Shitas and Rishonim about what wounding somebody is about. So what is the, why is that not correct? He's saying that when you're pressing it there, more blood comes out in the meantime.
It's not true.
No, it is true. What's that?
It's
no, it's better than that. It's a Dabar Shein Miskavein, and for some sick ratio, the Loni Chalei. So that's not likely to be the issue here. It's also Malach Shein Tzvich L'Guf as well, to make things even better. So Manechem Kilar is a strange one. It seems like the concern might have been with simply refuah going on Shabbos, and the Brice is telling us that that's mutter. It's not a problem. Okay, even though you might have thought to make a gzera, you don't. Now, is there any malacha, by the way? So, at least on the surface, what malacha would be involved when you do a kilar, though? There is a malacha involved, yeah? That's not automatic. That could be, but something even more obvious that we should point out is memachik. Memachik is when you take Vaseline and you spread it out and make a smooth layer on top of something. Wax would be the same thing as well. So that's called memachik. It's a tolda of memachik is ha'or. I'm sorry? That's a mimarech. That's a tolda of memachik. Okay. Tolda memachik. And that in making this polanis, that's an issue. Putting it on is not an issue. So all the others are theoretically malachos that continue on Shabbos that Beis Shammai permits. But Kilar is not no malacha that's continuing on Shabbos. So the fact, so that fact alone would suggest what?
This is not the same type of case.
But it is. In other words, I presume that the concern in all four cases is the same. We're not concerned with the part that's happening on Shabbos. We're concerned something about the part that happens before, and I'd say the most plausible suggestion would be that you might actually do it on Shabbos. In other words, once the kilar is munach, so it doesn't matter what happens on Shabbos. There's no malacha going on. For the others, malacha is going on, but you're not doing it. But if you argue that it's a gzera, you might come to do it on Shabbos if you do it right before Shabbos, so then I understand at least why the fourth one is categorized with the first three. Okay, a consideration. We'll come back to that. Now, the one restriction the Brice offers, go ahead. Okay, so you can't use a water mill to grind chitim on Shabbos. Why? So that's the question. So now the Gemara says, go ahead. Okay. Now, Rabbah says it's a problem of Hashemah's call. What is Hashemah's call? So Rashi writes that Av Shemilsa and Ikazilusa. It's not clear.
Okay, so
we're going to deal, the second part of this topic is going to be dealing with Halach Lamaisa, is talking about Hashemah's Kol, which comes in a couple of varieties. This is one, and the question of, not leaving a radio on, okay, so you don't want to leave, you want to leave the Yankees game on television to see if they can get shellacked equally again. The way Rashi explains it, something about this noise is av shemilsa, and therefore it's a problem. There are other explanations that are going to be given. What is the other obvious possibility of Hashemah's Kol, but obviously has no place here? It's going to be relevant on Shabbos, not before Shabbos. Yeah.
The
No. What kind of Hashemah's Kol is obviously a problem?
Music.
Okay, Hashemah's Kol is Shir, and that's going to be a whole discussion in the Sugya Erevin. That's the second half of this topic, as to whether or not Hashemah's Kol in that context is limited to Kol Shel Shir. But right here, it's obviously not a Kol Shel Shir. Whatever it is, it's something else.
Sorry to interrupt. We are hardly an organization where a number of individuals who distribute money to maximum 450 poverty-stricken people, families in Eretz Yisrael. These are penurious families in the original sense of the word. People who have next to nothing. We distribute the money before Yom Narayim and before Purim. The reason I come completely here is because something unusual happens to us. First of all, it's a counter. We verify the needs of the families from time to time. Even as their needs change, so do the stipends. We give larger stipends to larger families and small ones to smaller families. Equally important, and perhaps even more so, is there is no overhead. Every single cent that you give goes to the destination. Nothing is lost. Any expense incurred in getting the money there is borne by us. Nothing comes off the top. You think we give money to 400 to 450 families, we have to give them $50 to $100 a family. It comes out for large amounts of money. Most of the money comes to Yitzhak Ochan and its alumni, especially the alumni. There is an attorney who knew me when he was a rabbi in Yeshiva, who sent out a letter for myself and Rabbi Shachar to Shachar, a personal friend of mine. And from this, a lot of money comes in. People, of course, from every Jew wants to give stuff. So you have a lurking suspicion. I have that too. Some of the times I get a request. You know, is it honest? Do they really need it? And then, what percentage of the money goes to where it's supposed to go? Here we vouch for honesty. It's totally honest, and every single cent goes. And the Hershel chapter quotes me a few days before Sukkot. Any commitment made to him by that time would have counted as total honor. I will lay out the money. So if you know family, friends are interested, please let me get in touch with Rabbi Shachter. You can make out a check to my shul's charity fund for tax purposes. That's congregation towards you. So whatever you can do now, please do it. Whatever you can accept, please do it.
Shul, I'm going to leave you in charge one more time. Okay. I'll have one of my students who will collect. Can we do the collection after this year? And
I'll be here for you.
Okay. all right. So we have that. You can turn on low. Turn on low. You can turn it on now. It's going to be. Wolf has got to do the limba. What is it called? The limba. Okay. Anyway. So moving on. So the question, obvious question is, why is there a problem of Nisinas Chitim L'Rechayim? Firstly, what's the Malacha involved? Tochein. Okay. Now, if you put it in the thing on Shabbos, is it Nisit D'Oraisa or Nisit D'Rabbanan? You put it into the Rechayim. Well, Aaron said something very interesting, but he mixed up a category. Why is it the Rabbanan? No. On Shabbos, if you would put the chitim into the Rechayim, Michael? In a watermill, Michael? You were gonna no, Michael. You're Michael. Resnick is Michael. Oh yes. Okay. So is that correct? First thing. Why not? Because then Shabbos Malachas Masheves Asar Torah. It's a Gemara that you really wouldn't know existed because it's in Bava Kama Das Tamach Hamad Aleph. That Zorah V'Ruach Misayata, that's the proof. When you winnow, how does the grain get winnowed? How does the chaff get blown out? The wind, right? In other contexts, it might be considered not your koach. When it comes to Shabbos, Malachas Masheves Asar Torah. It's the one scenario in which Malachas Masheves creates chiyuvim. Normally, if you're familiar with this concept. You may have heard it before. We say Melachas Machsheves Asra Torah. That's why Melachas Shein Tzricha LeGufa for those who hold is Mutter Menat Torah is Mutter. That's why Mekalkel is Mutter. That's why Misasek Yonachayev on and so on. So this concept of Melachas Machsheves Asra Torah. So that's the one case where that's not going to be so. Yeah. I don't think Koch Koko is going to make a difference. If the concept is Malacha Shah, firstly, I'm not sure. I have to think back. What's the Sugya in Sanhedrin? See, when one thing is moving the other directly, with direct it's a very difficult question about the comments to distinguish between when is it two Kochos, when is it one. I think this is a clear case since the water is moving the wheel and in the process is grinding it. The fact that there's a physical separation between doesn't make Koch Koko. But I mean, even if it were, let's say you were correct, it would cough kochel. I still think that the consideration of Melechis Masheves Asur Torah would also make you chayav.
And they talk about a fridge.
Cough kochel, or is that a question of grammar?
Okay.
So I think that in this case it'd be hard anyway to call it cough kochel. So put that aside, we may revisit that. Okay. So in theory, I'll tell you when it would be clearly a problem. It would be a problem if the water was running while you put the wheat in. But supposing whatever the factors caused it to be no motion in the wheel. Supposing the way this works is that there's a buildup of pressure and then a release and then the wheel goes a certain amount. You figure out some type of scenario. So then it's not so posh whether or not you hide it. Okay, but assume that if the wheel is grinding, as you put it in, you'd be hide. So the Mishnah says you can't. So the Bryson says you can't do it. So what's the reason? So Rabbi says, Hashmo Asko. So what did Rabbi Yosef say? How about Rabbi Yosef? First question, side point. How does the V'chol Asher Amarti Alachem Tishomeru teach you Shvitas Kelim? Now you should be able to figure this out on your own, even if you don't look at Rashi. If you just think about the Pesukim. But Rashi does say, what's that? Does anyone know the second half of this Pesuk, out looking at the side in the margin? V'shem Elohim Acherim lo saskiru lo yishama al picha. So the answer is, you have to know the Pesuk before. And the pasuk before says, "Sheish yamin tasem asecha, uvayom ashri tishpos, leman yanuach, sharchar v'chamorecha, v'inafesh banam asecha v'ager." So the previous pasuk has leman yanuach sharchar v'chamorecha, the mitzvah of shvisas behema, which is really, in some ways, really the malka for shvisas behema, because there's no iser in a behema doing malacha on Shabbos. There's an iser in the behema doing your malacha on Shabbos. The behema wants to eat grass because it's hungry. That malacha is permitted for a behema. That's not menucha for a behema. If you don't let it eat grass, that's tzar. That's not my lashon. That's Rashi. Rashi, I think Rashi says yachol that you should close it up inside a house. So that's not menucha. That's tzar. Then mina feshpana masachav ager. Your eved and your ger toshav, which might be a nisav amir el akum daraisa, can also not do malach at your behest. And then uvechol asher marti alechem tishameru. So now, something else is being included here, and that's the Rabbah Shvisas Kelim. This is also a passage in the Mechilta de Rashbi, and obviously Parshas Mishpatim. Did anybody look up the Mechilta? Well, you should have, but in this case, the Mechilta is not really going to shed any light, because what you see here is what you get there. Fine. So, El Am Rabbi Yosef. Mishum Shvisas Kelim. Now, the truth is, I assume the statement in between belongs to Rabbi Yosef, because it's perceived by Amar Le Rabbi Yosef. But a more neat presentation of this piece would have been Amar Rabam Imei Hashemas Kol, Amar Rabbi Yosef Mishum Shvisas Kelim. That would have been a simpler presentation. But here, the Gemara seems to preserve the dialogue, at least one way between Rabbi Yosef and Rabbi. Okay, now when you get to the next section, this becomes very important. Rabbi Yosef is finished. We have a machlokas. Now, let me ask you a question. Does this braisa shitas beis shamai or shitas beis hillel according to Rabba and according to Rav Yosef? Aaron?
According to Rabba, I think it's really beis hillel. It's just that in other words, it's everything is mutter, and then it's come up with some other reason as to why this would be also, whereas, you know, why isn't every regular system?
Who says that these things are usher even according to Beis Shammai? Does the Braisa mention Beis Shammai?
No.
Does Rabba mention Beis Shammai?
No.
Okay. So is there any reason, reading the Sugya to assume that Rabba holds a Dafka one or the other? Well, is that true? That's only assuming it has the... So you want to argue that since Beis Shammai asks things in the Mishnah, and the Tana here is not to everything, but it must be Beis Hillel. Okay. What about Rav Yosef? Ari?
Well, Rav Yosef used to be synonymous with Beis Shammai, because Beis Shammai's case is that a mitzvah can't be performed on Shabbos. That's the basis of Machlokes between.
Well, we don't know yet. Just want to read the Gemara without your filling in. I wanted to Rabba, they agree. Rabba says that this price is Dafka Beis Hillel, right? So Rav Yosef comes along, so he assumes that this braisa is?
Again, it depends on what you consider Hashemah's call and Shvita's tail. Whether that's a mitzvah or not. It depends on why Rav Yosef felt that.
There is one thing that's clear. Rav Yosef is explaining the braisa, and he's explaining the braisa by saying that Tchina Berechayim is Mishum Shvita's Kelim. However, it is the case, the earlier cases are not Shvita's Kelim. Now, whatever the Hesper is, I want to know, according to Rabbi Yosef, is he saying this right now within Beis Shammai, Beis Hillel, both?
Until the Gemara brings up the memory of Rabbi, it seems they've come out of the book.
Correct. Or at least, if you want to assume the bias towards Beis Hillel simply because, you know, we paskin aliba the Beis Hillel, and assuming that Rabbi Yosef really would accept this as halacha, so certainly we would assume it's at least Beis Hillel, if not Beis Shammai too.
And if Rabba is Beis Hillel, you think
that the argument is the same. Correct. In addition, if Rabba is including Sheep as Beis Hillel, and there's no reason, there's certainly no grounds for assuming Hashemah's call at this point is any more of an issue for Beis Shammai than it is for Beis Hillel, if there is such an issue. So, if that's the case, if Rabba is speaking within Beis Hillel, so then so is Rabbi Yosef. So when you read the Gemara, the Machlokas is not dependent upon the Machlokas Beis Shammai Beis Hillel. Asi? No, there could be a different consideration in the Mishnah. In other words, so you want to argue that? So you're. So I'm going to tell you very, very simply. The Gemara is about to flesh this out. If you assume Rav Yosef works within Shvitas Beis Hillel, so you have to say Beis Hillel asers Shvitas Kelim only the Kelim do a Maisa. And that's the difference between Rechaim Shamayim and all the other cases in the Mishnah and the beginning of the Braisa. Except that Rabba and Rabbi Yosef have not mentioned the word about Beis Shammai Beis Hillel. Do not make the mistake of going back after reading the continuation of the Gemara and assuming they're working within the calculation of Beis Shammai Beis Hillel. They're not. I assume they are aware of the Machlokas Beis Shammai Beis Hillel in the Mishnah, but they don't specify one way or another.
Isn't that what they're trying to do, though, at the bottom of the Dom match up Rabbi Yosef and Rabba with Beis Shammai?
So that bottom Tosus makes a very great leap. I don't normally read Marams, but something else brought my attention to Marams, who makes a whole big deal about the way Tosus sees the continuation of the Gemara. But the simple reading in the Gemara is that the Machlokas Rabba and Yosef is within Shitas Beis Hillel. Okay, just based upon their silence and perhaps a preference towards wanting to have the Braisa Aliba, you know, when it doesn't specify Aliba de Hilchasa. Now the Gemara continues and has three statements, the Hashtas. Three the Hashtas. Go ahead. Hashta the Amrit. Cross off the Raisa. None of the Kisveyat have it. Okay, that could matter, but so now that you say, and who's talking, by the way? Probably the Stam. you would have expected Amar Lei if it were Rabbah talking. Normally you would get the response. But now the Gemara is talking. The Hashtadam is now that if you want to assume that for Beis Hillel there's a thing such as Shemisas Kalim, the first question you have to ask, and again, when you're interested in conceptual learning, you don't really often bother with this, but if you're interested in learning the Gemara, why did the Gemara assume that Rabbi Yosef was working within Beis Hillel? It's a question that you know. Where did the Gemara say? Doesn't. Rabbi Yosef just said that the Braisa holds the Shvisas Kalim. He didn't take a stand on it. So that's why Rashi immediately jumps in and says, what does Rashi say? Are y'all read Rashi? We are Rishonim reader. Go ahead. Five lines before it gets wide. Okay. So Rashi takes the line a number of you suggested that that the fact that he permits the earlier ones and prohibits only this, so it must be that it's Shitas Beis Hillel. In other words, otherwise he would have prohibited all the other things. Lav Daska. In other words, whatever exactly the reason is in the Mishnah, assuming for the moment the Mishnah is not because of Shvisas Kalim, obviously it can't be, otherwise Beis Hillel would prohibit at this point. So there's at least superficially a commonality between the first cases in the Braisa and the Mishnah. Certainly, Manich and Mugmar and Gophers. To Nostan Unushal Pishtan Lethoch HaTaner. So Rashi says it must be that the Braisa is Beis Hillel at this point. Okay? Now, Rashi obviously is ignoring what the Gemara is going to do later on, which is to explain why the Mishnah's cases might be different than the Braisa's cases. Ozzy?
Isn't the Rashi explain the logical focus of it and benefit all based on the order of also based on the order of Rabbi Yosef? That kind of Shmat Kol for this verse is an indicator that it's not
the Rashba has a very long and it's sometimes difficult piece on the Gemara where he disagrees with Rashi, gives whatever explanation he gives. I'm not interested in pursuing it at great length. I think the simplest explanation is that Hashma is called, there's no reason to assume any difference between Shammai Beis Hillel, and there's also a preference, so immediately the assumption is that Rabbah is working within Beis Hillel, and the preference of the Amoraim would be, as to ask this kasha, v'lein memar mishum shvisas kalim, why does Rabbi Yosef want to make it shvisas kalim if that's going to wind up as being ultimately like Beis Shammai, if after all, wouldn't you rather the Braisa be Beis Hillel? And that's certainly why the prior bias is to assume they're working within Beis Hillel, because that would be what they would want to do. When we're forced to explain a Shita, if we are, in Beis Shammai, so then we'll do so. Okay? If you're interested, you can see that Rashba.
Even if Rashi is ignored, what the Gemara is going to do later, how would you justify that he used to Al-Kart?
No, but it's when you look at the case, when you just look at the cases and you say Hamani, the answer is Beis Hillel. I agree. Al-Kharkhik means what we know until now, looking at it, it must be. Obviously, it doesn't have to be. He's going to change his mind. He knows that. But based upon the data you have until now, remember when Rashi writes on the Mishnah, the Rabbi Bartinur constantly gets attacked by the Tosfos Yontov and the other Achronim when he explains a Mishnah Shelo Aliba the Maskanas HaGemara, and frequently he's just quoting Rashi verbatim. But they always say Rashi has an excuse because Rashi is just explaining the Mishnah on its own terms before you get to the Gemara. But the Rav wasn't. The Rav was supposed to be explaining based upon the Maskan of the Gemara. Maybe the Rav didn't think so either. But anyway, so Rashi, when you read Rashi in the Sugya, don't factor in other Sugyas and don't factor in the conclusion. Read him where he is now. So central issue you have to address in the Gemara is simply how did the Gemara know that they were working within Beis Hillel, and that's to be shown to give whatever answers they give. Okay, now the Gemara, so based upon that, and we'll conclude with this for now, Gofer Su Mugmar, if that's the case, that Beis Hillel holds of Shvisas Kalim, right, so now that you want to assume this is, in fact, Shitas Beis Hillel, and they hold the Shitas Kalim, within the Braisa right now, what's the difference? So you notice the Gemara never is going to ask from what? What does it not ask from? Kilar. Because there's no malacha being done on Shabbos. Right? So they don't ask for Kila, but they ask, Gofer Samugmar, my time in the Shara, and the answer is, okay, so the Kalim aren't actually doing Malacha. Okay, in order to be Malacha, it has to be active. Okay, they're they able Malacha to be done, but they don't actually do the Malacha. Right, by the Kli containing the Gofferis that burns in it, so it enables the Gofferis to burn. But it's not burning the Gofferis, it's not doing it.
How do you know that in this actual, this caveat that we should low carbon not that is talking about the Kalim? I know there's other Kalim that say it's the Kalim, but if you say it's not the Kalim,
what else? Except that the Gemara has just asked the question, Gofres among my time at the show, it should be a problem of Shvitas Kelim. Saying that you're not doing anything doesn't answer the question. You know, maybe somebody on the side has a Girsa, he quotes a Girsa of Kelim. But I would if anything that had Kalim would probably be a later explanatory note, but I think without that it's obvious. Okay, so Gofres and Mugmar are permitted because Lo Kav and Maisa. All right, why does what else does the Gemara not ask from? Post Gemayim, why not? Because it's Karka, there's nothing doing Malach at that point, it's no Kli, it's the Karka. Right, it's just gravity pulling the water out. Okay, finally the Gemara asks, two more questions. Unin. I don't know what the Menach Naicha is doing there. I have to see how it's different than the previous cases. Okay, fine. Finally, Mitsudos. All right, so Rashi describes what Alachi Kukari are. It's a kind of, you know, you can have two kinds of traps. You can have the, I don't know how many of you have dealt with mice. But if you can have a mouse trap where you have a little cage, and then the mouse goes in and nibbles on the cheese in the cartoons, and the cage door slams shut. That's Seda with a Kli doesn't mice. Alternatively, you know, the mouse or a mouse trap. And why do I have to go that far? A mouse trap, right? The mouse sticks its nose in, you know, to grab the thing, whack. Make sure when you set one of those, you don't get your fingers near it. And that's the Kli does malacha. On the other hand, you can have something where the Kli doesn't do any malacha, you know, a snare where the animal goes in, you know, goes in one way, but a glue fine, or it goes in one way, but it can't get out because the pieces, it ends up dry, getting itself stuck on the pieces going out. Those are rather, so that would be a lechi the kukari, the loka oven maisa. And I don't know how you, someone writes up the shiurim, I don't know how you're going to transcribe that expression, but whatever it is. So basically, at this point, the Gemara says, "Okay, Rabbi Yosef is working within Beis Hillel, but how do they permit some shvitas kelim, not other shvitas kelim? The distinction is oven meisa, lo oven meisa. Okay, and why did the Gemara have to assume that Rab was working in Beis Hillel? So that we spoke about already. Okay, we'll stop at this point. You can just click on the probably the same thing."